What about you, Jane? Do you have a name for your bat? Billy asked as they walked outside into the blinding sunshine. Jane was about to answer when the sound of loud footsteps running up behind him interrupted his thoughts. It was Ward, and he was coming at them as fast as he could move. "Jane! Jane!" he announced breathlessly, nearly doubled over out of breath. "The Japs have bombed Pearl Harbor!" It took a moment for Ward's words to sink in. "Why would they do that?" asked Billy, "and where's Pearl Harbor?" "Who cares why? They did!" Ward screamed. "Pearl Harbor is in Hawaii, somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. Gene, we are at war. Or at least we will be officially soon. I'm joining the army tomorrow. You'll turn 17 in March, and as soon as you do, I want you to join me as fast as you can. We'll teach those bums a lesson." "Hey, don't forget me," Billy shouted. "I'm gonna join the Navy. If they bomb Pearl Harbor, the Navy's gonna be where the fighting is. What about you, Gene?" Gene had no idea what to say. He shrugged. "I gotta go with Ward, Billy. I can't swim." "Wait a second," Jamie interrupted. "You can't go running off to war. You're all too young, and none of you really know what is going on yet. There might not even be a war. Billy, you're a musician. What are you gonna do in the Navy?" "There's time for music later, Jamie. Besides, I'm a pretty good boxer, too, and I ain't gonna take no crap from someone who would attack us, especially on a Sunday. I bet some of our men were in church or sleeping when the bombs fell." Realizing she wasn't getting anywhere with Billy, Jamie shifted her focus to Ward. "Your brother Gene isn't a soldier, he's a baseball player. He's waiting to hear where to report for spring training. He's been talking about it all winter. He can't go join the army, Ward. My dad says everyone in Cesar is counting on him to play baseball in the major leagues." "Come on, Jamie, that's a game." "Gene, she's talking about a stupid game. This is war. The Japs have attacked us and we're gonna make 'em pay," Ward shouted. "Don't you yell at me, Ward Moore," Jamie shot back. "You're all riled up and you just better settle down." Gene stepped between them. "Jamie, there'll be time for baseball, music, and everything else. If our country needs us, we'll pitch in and do our part." "I know, Gene, but you didn't start this war. If there really is one, the Japs did. Besides, you could get hurt or even killed." Jamie lifted a hand to her mouth and stifled a sob. By this time, Ward was visibly agitated. Gene's nonchalant shrugs only made him more incensed. "Wait a minute, little brother, you're not listening to this crap, are you?" "Of course I'll join, Ward. I mean, if there's a war, we're needed. Can't take that long to beat the Japs." "If you all want to run off to war, go ahead," Jamie said. "But I don't understand why. Gene and Billy, you weren't mad at the Japs when we walked into the theater. I don't know who they're mad at, but I'm pretty certain it ain't me, you, or anyone else in Cesar. And you, Ward Moore, can't you think of one very important reason why you shouldn't go away?"
"Jamie," Ward answered in a softer tone, "that's exactly why I have to go. Why we all have to go. If they'll attack us at Pearl Harbor, they'll attack us anywhere. Even here."
"Ward, the Japs aren't coming here. I bet they couldn't find Cesar with a map," Jamie snickered. "Go ahead and laugh, Jamie, but this is serious business." Ward shook his head in disbelief and angrily walked away. "Why is he so upset, Jane?" she finally asked when Ward disappeared around the corner.
"Maybe he's mad because he wants to protect you," Jane replied.
Jamie smiled. "Does he ever talk about me?"
"Oh, not much."
"Only all the time," chuckled Jane. "Jane, I don't want anything bad to happen to him. I just don't know what I'd do if the Japs killed him."
"Don't worry, Jamie," Billy spoke up. "Nothing will happen to Ward. Those Japs don't stand a chance when all of us Cesar men get there. Besides, once they see Ward's temper, they'll run back to Japan as fast as they can," Jane said with a smile. They all laughed together.
"I better get home," Billy said. "My mom's gonna be really upset when she gets this news.
I need to be there."
"Sure, Billy. I'll talk to you soon." The three were parting company when Billy turned back. "Hey, Jane, I bet this is a day we won't soon forget."
Jane nodded in agreement.
"Jane, Ward, Helen, Margaret, Beth, Irma, Hilda, everyone get in here. The president's wife, Mrs. Roosevelt, is going to speak," Allie called out as she gathered her children into the living room of the old house in the corner of Matthew and Mulberry. Gene walked out of the kitchen eating a piece of his mom's homemade bread with last year's blueberry jam smeared all over one side. Pop tuned in their old RCA radio to KMOX in St. Louis. "I want all you kids to hear this," John said. "This is the First Lady, and she's going to talk to us about what happened today at Pearl Harbor."
The radio crackled and snapped as a woman's voice began speaking.
"Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking to you tonight at a very serious moment in our history. The cabinet is convening, and the leaders in Congress are meeting with the president. The State Department and Army and Navy officials have been with the president all afternoon. In fact, the Japanese ambassador was talking to the president at the very time that Japan's airships were bombing our citizens in Hawaii and the Philippines and sinking one of our transports loaded with lumber on its way to Hawaii.
Mrs. Roosevelt's calm and reassuring voice helped settle the nation's fear and anxiety. She expressed the necessity of being prepared and facing the challenges at hand. Most importantly, she spoke to the mothers and wives of those who would soon be going off to war.
I'd like to say just a word to the women in the country tonight. I have a boy at sea on a destroyer. For all I know, he may be on his way to the Pacific. Two of my children are in coast cities on the Pacific. Many of you all over this country have boys in the services who will now be called upon to go into action. You cannot escape anxiety. You cannot escape a clutch of fear at your heart. And yet I hope that the certainty of what we have to meet will make you rise above these fears. We must go about our daily business, more determined than ever to do the ordinary things as well as we can.
The Moore family was captivated by the voice of the woman they had come to love. She was the wife of their leader, the President of the United States of America. But she, too, was a mother and would have a son in harm's way. She reached out to all the mothers to let them know she understood what they were feeling. But she also talked directly to the sons and daughters of a nation that suddenly found itself at war. Gene felt as though she was talking directly to him, and the First Lady's words inspired him to a new feeling of valor.
To the young people of the nation, I must speak a word tonight. You are going to have a great opportunity. There will be high moments in which your strength and your ability will be tested. I have faith in you. I feel as though I was standing upon a rock. That rock is my faith in my fellow citizens.
When Mrs. Roosevelt finished speaking, John reached over and turned off the radio. Ward turned his face to Dad. Pop, I'm joining up first thing in the morning. I have to, Pop. Our country needs me, and it'll need Gene, too, as soon as he turns 17. You heard what she said. Mom got up out of her chair, wrapped her arms around Ward, and began to cry. No, you don't have to go so soon, Ward. Let's wait and see. It may be over in a few days or a few weeks. Let's not jump right into this war yet. Allie pulled out a handkerchief and blew her nose. Mom, I have to go. You raised me this way. They've attacked us, and we can't let them get away with it. I'm sorry, Mom. I'll be okay, but I have to go. I want to be that rock Mrs. Roosevelt can stand on, that all of you can stand on. Pop put his hand on her shoulder. Mom, Ward's right. I'm sure if he doesn't join, they'll just call him up anyway. Gene, you can join me in March on your birthday, announced his older brother. By then I'll have the army all figured out and you'll have it made. Don't be putting those ideas into your brother's head, Allie stuttered, as she wiped her eyes with the apron she still had tied around her waist. He's too young for the army, and besides, it'll all be over by then. The doubting look on the faces of her husband and eldest son only stiffened her resolve. Besides, he's a ball player, not a soldier. He's waiting to find out where he's going to report for spring training. Wait a minute, Mom, Ward interrupted. Where have you been all day? We've been attacked. Hundreds, maybe thousands of Americans were murdered today. I don't give a damn about all this baseball crap. Ward stepped away from his mom and started to walk out. Russell Ward Moore, don't you ever talk to your mother that way, John thundered. It was one of the few times they had heard him yell. The news of Pearl Harbor had gotten to John, too. Ward stopped in mid-stride and turned to face his father, a look of angry frustration plainly written across his face. I'm sick and tired of hearing about Gene and baseball. That's what everyone in this stinking town cares about. There's a war going on, and what are we talking about? Gene, the baseball player. I walk down Main Street and hear people say, hey, isn't that Gene's brother? It's as if I don't even have a name anymore. Now my own mother's telling me he's a ball player. Jamie Reed today at the Opera House telling us that Gene shouldn't join up. Well, what about me? I guess it's okay if I go risk my life for our country, but not Gene. He's too valuable. Not Gene, your little baby ball player. Ward was crossing a line and everyone knew it. Gene reached out in an effort to calm Ward down, but the move prompted the older brother to take a swing that hit Gene squarely in the nose, knocking him to the floor. Guess you weren't fast enough to duck that, spat Ward as he stood over his sibling. John jumped between the two boys, pushing Ward backward and away from the prostrate Gene. Allie knelt down beside her son. Enough, Russell Ward Moore. Take a walk and simmer down.
John demanded, grabbing Ward by both shoulders and forcing him toward the front door. Clenching and unclenching his sore hand, Ward stormed out of the house, slamming the door behind him for good measure. "Jean, are you all right?" Allie asked her son as she got up from the floor. She was crying again. "Yeah, I'm fine." Tiny trickle of blood dripped from his nose, but Jean felt more embarrassment than pain. "Jean, come help me get a bucket of coal," commanded John. "The stove's getting low and it's going to be cold tonight." The two Moores walked to the barn together. "Don't be angry at your brother, Jean. This war has him all worked up. Has us all worked up, I guess. He's not mad at you." "I know, Pop. I'm not sore at him either. But I didn't know my playing baseball bothered him so much." "He'll be fine. Your brother's. No argument will change that. He's much more proud of you than he lets on." Jean remained silent, rubbing his nose before checking to see if any teeth were loose. "What are you gonna do, Jean?" "What should I do?" "Ward's over 18. If he wants to join the army, he can do as he pleases. I wouldn't stop him even if I wanted to, which I don't. I'm proud of your brother. You're only 16, though. You can't join until March, but even then, only if I sign for you." Jean nodded his understanding but remained silent, knowing his father was not yet done speaking. "You don't have to make any decisions tonight. But let me tell you something. I know it doesn't seem like we have much. This little farm doesn't produce enough to take care of all our needs. I do odd jobs. We get by." He shrugged. "Lots of people have it a lot worse than we do. We aren't starving and things. Well, they'll get better. Even though we struggle, we're free. This country has been good to us, and we have to do what we can to protect what's ours. I did. I served in Europe before you were born." That news surprised Jean, who suddenly looked upon his father in a different light. "I've seen things I've never been able to talk about," the elder Moore continued. "But we did what we had to do. Because of that war, we're still free." He paused briefly, narrowing his eyes as Jean imagined him reliving some of the horrors of war. "The thought of my sons going off to war, well, it makes me plain sick. I thought I did it so you wouldn't have to. They told us that the last war would end all wars." John was growing more angry as he spoke, his voice getting louder with each word. He caught himself, as he always did, took a breath, and began again. "I guess what I'm saying..." "I know what you're saying, Pop," interrupted Jean. "You can count on me. Ward can count on me. I'll do my part. I never said otherwise. Jamie, Mom, everyone's trying to speak for me. It's everyone else who keeps talking like I should play ball instead of defending my country. If it's not over by March 19, I intend to sign up. I'll do my part." John nodded in reply and began filling his bucket with coal. President Roosevelt addressed a joint session of Congress the next day. The entire nation listened.
"Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan."
For most Americans, it was the first time they ever heard the word infamy, but they didn't need a dictionary to understand its meaning. America had been attacked, and the Japanese had awakened a sleeping giant. True to his word, Russell Ward Moore enlisted in the United States Army the morning of December 8, 1941. He shipped out for basic training by rail from Carbondale, Illinois, on the morning of December 12. Ward kissed Jamie goodbye but didn't say much to Jean before he left. His abrupt departure hurt Jean, even though he was used to not getting much attention from his older brother. Jean loved Ward and was proud of his brother's patriotic stance. As he watched Ward's train pull away from the station, Jean confirmed again in his own mind that he would join him as soon as he turned 17. World War II touched everyone and every institution, including baseball. Jean received a letter from Frank Boudreau and the Dodgers on the afternoon of December 21. "The day Jean turned 18, explained the letter, he'd be drafted into the military. In an effort to continue his baseball career, the Dodgers made arrangements for Jean to join the Navy and play ball with the Navy exhibition team. Jean would have to go into the service 1 year early, at age 17. The news was not overly disappointing. The immediate future of professional baseball was in doubt anyway. Frank's letter instructed him to take the accompanying documents to the Navy recruiter, and they would make all the arrangements. Jean did as instructed and shipped off to the Great Lakes Naval Air Station near Chicago, one day after he turned 17. Chapter 7. In the Navy. From the window of the northbound Illinois Central train, Chicago looked like something out of a motion picture. To Gene, the city appeared big, bustling, and most of all, intimidating. From the time he left Carbondale, Gene's train carried him on a tour of one small town after another. Effingham, Rantoul, Ashcombe, Bradley, Manteno, and Monee. Chicago arose from the landscape like some miraculous growth from the flat earth. As the train drew closer, Chicago appeared to Gene like the Emerald City from The Wizard of Oz, shining gloriously on the horizon. Gene had spent time in St. Louis playing with the granary team. The city by the Mississippi River was bigger than any he had ever imagined could be. Chicago dwarfed St. Louis in every way. Gene and the other new recruits and passengers disembarked at Union Station. The catcher from Cesar marveled at the lively atmosphere and the stunning architecture. Union Station looked like it had been lifted from a history book. The beautiful marble interior, complete with Greek statues looking down from Mount Olympus, was unlike anything he had ever seen. Tens of hundreds of people were there, each going on about his or her business. Some were dressed in business suits, though most were in uniform. Entire families were gathered together to send a loved one off to war. Everyone was in a hurry. The looks, the smells, the sounds of the big city train station were simultaneously exciting and threatening. Gene stepped out onto Madison Street, unable to reconcile the contrast in sights and sounds between Cesar and Chicago. In Cesar, sounds flowed through the trees, fields, and rolling hills. In Chicago, the noise bounced back and forth from building to building. The sounds echoing in front of Union Station reminded Gene of being in a gymnasium in rural Illinois. He was outside, and yet he felt closed in. The recruits milled about in front of the station for a few minutes before boarding a bus that would carry them to Navy Pier. The ride took less than 15 minutes. The half-mile-long pier stretched from Chicago's lakeshore into Lake Michigan. Gene walked out onto the pier and marveled at the size of the second largest of the five Great Lakes. "This is a lake?" Gene uttered to no one in particular. As far as the eye could see was water. Lakes were small, and you could see across to the other side. This one looked too much like what he imagined an ocean would be. Besides the old Keller Mine Pond, the Mississippi River was the largest body of water he had ever seen. Gene was processed into the Navy with several hundred other recruits. He was issued a sea bag, two sets of uniforms, and a blanket. His first meal in the Navy followed, a hearty helping of chipped beef and milk and flour gravy served on toast. As he quickly learned, the meal was referred to by Navy vets as SOS. SOS, he repeated to a guy a couple years older than him, sitting next to him. What does that mean? It means shit on a shingle. You never heard that before? Gene laughed and shook his head. Nope, never heard that one. That was one menu item he wasn't going to mention back home either, because he knew if his mom heard him say it, she would wash his mouth out with ivory soap, even if he was a grown man discharged from the Navy with a medal. The others around him complained about the food, but Gene thought it was rather good. If nothing else, it was hot and filling. After dinner, Gene sat on his cot in a cavernous room with hundreds of other young men. He was surrounded by a sea of strangers. It was the first time he began to feel homesick. Playing ball in St. Louis felt nothing like this because he knew he was only a little more than an hour away from Cesar. If he didn't like it, he could quit and hitchhike home. Now he was in Chicago, and had been told in no uncertain terms when he was sworn in that quitting the Navy would be desertion, and deserters were shot. Bored and homesick, Gene stretched out on his cot and decided to get some sleep. 5 short minutes later, just as he was beginning to drift off, he heard a loud voice shouting his name. "Sailor Warren Eugene Moore, identify yourself." Gene leaped to his feet. "Here." A tall officer in dress uniform was moving in his direction. "You Moore?" he inquired. "Yes, I'm Moore. They call me Gene." "You mean yes, sir, don't you, sailor? You're addressing an ensign in the United States Navy." The officer glared at the new recruit, his face just 6 inches from Gene's nose. Gene swallowed and held his temper. "Yes, I'm sorry," he stammered, not knowing the exact protocol for addressing an ensign. "Sir, I mean, yes, sir." The ensign glared at him for a few more seconds before bursting into laughter and taking a step backwards. "Stop it, I'm just kidding," he chuckled, reaching out to shake Gene's hand. "I'm Buck Nelson, your new baseball coach, but in front of the real sailors, you have to call me Sir. The rest of the time, call me Coach or just plain Buck." Gene let out a long sigh and shook his new coach's hand. "Hi, Buck, it's good to..." "You will address me as Sir," Buck shot back, adding under his breath, "when others are around." Gene offered a vigorous nod of understanding. "Sir! Yes, sir!" "That's better." Buck looked around and moved closer to Jean, whispering, "You know, I'm not really sure about that, to tell you the truth. Today is my first day in the Navy, too, but I think it's aye, aye, sir. But don't quote me, though." Buck cracked a grin and backed up a second time. "Let's take a walk and talk a bit." Buck Nelson was nothing like Jean. He was 29 years old and a graduate of Columbia, where he attended school on a baseball scholarship. Standing tall in his perfectly pressed, dress blue Navy uniform, there was something quite proper about Buck. He looked like he just stepped out of the Navy recruiting poster. An all-American boy.